Christmas before. And now your host, John Friend.
All right, folks, welcome back to another edition of The Realist Report. This is your host, John Friend. Today is Wednesday, November 20th, 2019. Of course, my website is therealistreport.com, where you will find an extensive archive of these podcasts, as well as other radio programs I've participated in. You will also find all of my blog posts and articles, a contact page, my Twitter feed, which is embedded in the right-hand sidebar of the website, and many other useful links. I am a regular reporter for American Free Press, America's last real newspaper, and I've also contributed to the Barnes Review, the bi-monthly history magazine affiliated with American Free Press. I encourage listeners to subscribe to these fine print publications. Check out AmericanFreePress.net and BarnesReview.org for all of the details. Okay, with that said, let me introduce our special guest today. Dr. Paul Craig Roberts is joining us on the line. Dr. Roberts is the former Assistant Secretary of the Treasury for Economic Policy under President Ronald Reagan, and has also worked as a political consultant, journalist, and commentator. He is one of the most important public intellectuals and dissidents in America today, and I'm quite honored to have him here. Dr. Roberts, welcome to the program, sir. How are you this morning?
Thank you, John.
Good. Yeah, thank you so much for joining us. I've been majorly influenced by your writings and interviews over the years, and I know you've been a regular columnist and contributor to American Free Press over the years, so it's really great to have you here. And I know we only have 30 minutes, so I kind of want to jump right into this and ask you, I have a few topics here I'd like to go over. And to kind of get started, as we wrap up this year and move into the 2020 election season, what in your mind are the most important political issues Americans should be cognizant of and concerned with?
Well, the most important one is, of course, whether this coup directed by the military security complex, essentially the CIA and the FBI, with the corporation of the Democratic Party and the prostitute media, if this succeeds and they remove a president, it means the end of any sort of democratic control or accountability of government, because all future presidents will have learned from Trump's experience that if you get in the way of the ruling elite, they remove you. And the electorate will learn that it's pointless to try to change anything because the elite simply won't permit it. So the 2020 election may be meaningless if this coup against Trump succeeds. It essentially, elections will no longer matter because the operating control over the country by the, what we can call the deep state, will be open and brazen, and everyone will know that nothing can be done about it.
Yes, I think this is, I agree with your assessment. I think this is becoming increasingly more and more clear as each day passes, especially with President Trump in the White House. And I actually wanted to get your assessment of President Trump. Did you support him in 2016? And what is your assessment of his administration thus far?
Well, he hasn't had an administration because he's been mired in an orchestrated controversy, but first Russiagate and now Ukrainegate or whatever they call it, its effort to impeach him for something that nobody knows exactly what. I didn't support Trump. I supported the goals that he had. He wanted to normalize relations with Russia and to bring the offshore jobs back home. These are the two most important policy issues that the country faces, and he was the only one who addressed them. So I thought that he deserved everyone's support. Unfortunately, once he announced he was going to normalize relations with Russians, he threatened the annual budget of the military security complex, which is $1,000 billion, by saying he was going to take away their enemy. If you have normal relations with Russia, then it doesn't provide the enemy function that the military security complex needs to continue its massive budget and the power that goes with that budget. So instantly he was under attack and claimed to be a Russian agent and in league with Putin and stole the election and so on and so on. Well, this, of course, was all absurd. And even though the military security complex had all the positions of power, they were unable to establish that. And so when that failed, they immediately found some new way, and they got some CIA hack to claim he had overheard some telephone conversation, and it turns out that no, he hadn't. He'd only had it secondhand, and now he's disappeared because the Democrats won't let him testify because it will come out that it was all orchestrated by Adam Schiff and without doubt the CIA. So they keep changing the focus. It goes on and on and on, and nothing ever appears, no evidence, no indication of anything being amiss on Trump's part, and yet it persists. And so this means he essentially has not had an administration. He's not able to function because they have blocked him from doing anything by keeping him under these constant attacks.
Yes, that's absolutely true. And this equally applies to his policies relating to immigration. You know, anytime that he's tried to make a move and implement his America First immigration agenda, his ostensible America First immigration agenda, I should say, he's stymied by the courts or even by people in his own administration. And in my view, I mean, as we approach the 2020 election, I mean, this remains, if not the most important, certainly one of the most important issues facing our country is immigration and demographic change. And that includes both illegal immigration and legal immigration. And, you know, these are very, very important issues. And we see how the deep state, the political establishment, the mass media has essentially openly colluded to stymie Trump's efforts to deal with these issues.
Yes, and any other issue. So as we seem to agree, he's not able to function as president because he's under constant attack. The real question I have is, where is the Attorney General? Where is William Barr? Where are these reports? Where are the indictments of the CIA and the FBI for orchestrating Russiagate and deceiving the FISA court? It looks to me like that Trump essentially doesn't have a government, that he's staffed up with his enemies. And even the Republicans seem to be dragging their feet. What would break up all this impeachment would be some indictments. Comey is clearly indictable because he misled the FISA court. A large number of other people seem to be indictable. There have been a number of former U.S. attorneys, former assistant U.S. attorneys, who have explained the crimes committed in the Russiagate hoax. And yet nothing is forthcoming. So it makes you wonder if Trump's own Justice Department hasn't hung him out to dry. If these indictments came forward, it would break up the Democrats' ranks very quickly. Hillary's indictable. We know that. There are all sorts of things that could be investigated that aren't. And so it makes you wonder if the Republicans aren't the same problem as the Democrats. They like the swamp. They like the money that it provides. They're equally as corrupt. And so Trump got in office, but there's no one to help him. I predicted that he would not know who to appoint, that he knew nothing about Washington, and that he would be staffed up with people who would not support him. And that has proved to be the case.
Well, I agree with you. And this is a point that Ann Coulter has been making since he became elected. You know, he's been appointing people into his own administration that are openly hostile to his agenda. What explains this? I mean, that's what I'm dumbfounded by. I mean, Trump seems like a pretty confident and a competent individual, yet he's appointing people that are openly, you know, against his stated agenda.
Well, he doesn't know who to appoint because he's not been a part of the Washington scene. And in Washington, there's literally nobody to appoint who's not part of the problem. I mean, if you're not part of the problem, you're not acceptable in Washington. So there's kind of a unanimous view in Washington, and whatever sort of dissent it is very small. It's just people competing for appointments. So it's not like there's a wide variety of voices in Washington or people who would take any action in behalf of the country rather than in behalf of their own career. So in that sense, I think it's explained by the fact that he did not have an organized movement behind him. The only person he ever appointed that made any sense was General Flynn, and he refused to stand by Flynn. And so most likely anyone else inclined to help him has watched him let people go. Flynn gets removed from office and framed up by some piece of crap. And then Russiagate is supposed to be investigating Russia's alleged interference in the election. But what Mueller does is he goes back 10, 15 years and brings some kind of most likely false charges against Republican political operatives like Paul Manafort and Roger Stone, which has nothing to do with Mueller's mandate, has nothing to do with Russiagate or Russian interference. And these two Republican fundraisers and political advisors get sentenced to prison, and nothing is done about it. You know, Bill Clinton could pardon all sorts of crooks, you know, like Mark Rich, and who actually were guilty of things. And Trump never goes to the defense of anyone. And so you have to say, well, who's going to take any risks for Trump? You know, I think that it's incredible that he let General Flynn, the former director of the Defense Intelligence Agency, go down like that. So it's hard to see how he's going to be able to do anything. And it looks like he may be losing the support of the Trump deplorables. At least this is what the prostitutes want us to believe with the various governor races and other local elections that they keep emphasizing how the Democrats are winning. So I don't know. I don't know. I don't understand why he thinks that he doesn't need help, that he doesn't need a government staff of people that would support him and fight and go out and find those people. But I don't think he's made any effort to locate these people.
Yes, I agree. And I mean, I think I was a huge Trump supporter. I think he was saying all the right things. He handled himself very well. He was bringing up very, very important topics that really nobody else was talking about, at least to the extent that he was. And yet, since he's become president, I mean, he's basically, in my opinion, been just a huge disappointment.
Wait a minute. I don't know if that would be a fair way to assess it. Essentially, he overestimated the power of the presidency and underestimated the power of the establishment by a huge margin. And so it's not like that he could have done something and didn't. The problem is if he can't do these things because they're more powerful than the president. And so his failure, I think, is in underestimating the forces he was up against and overestimating his own power. You know, if you're running your own show like he was, you're used to being the boss and you give an order and you expect it to happen. Well, Washington doesn't work that way. So, and certainly doesn't work that way for presidents. So I think he just wasn't aware of the difficulty of the kinds of agendas he wanted to impose. They're just not acceptable. And as we have agreed, he didn't have staff, cabinet secretaries, and so on, who were committed to his agenda. So essentially, he's impotent. And it's not like he had a chance to do something and didn't.
Right. No, those are fair points. I understand. You know, I wanted to turn to an article on your website, which is paulcraigroberts.org. That's your official website. And the most popular column of this year on your website is The Lies About World War II, where you review and discuss David Irving's books, who's a British historian. And I'm curious, what are some of the main conclusions that you've drawn about World War II since delving into this topic, this kind of revisionist aspect of World War II?
Well, everything that we taught about it, the way we understand it, is totally false. The Germans didn't start the war. The British were responsible. There was all sorts of skullduggery involved, all sorts of deceit of the British population, the American population. It involved a lot of sordid things, such as payments of large sums of money to Churchill from Jewish anti-German organizations and individuals that prevented any sort of peace, that unseated and got rid of Chamberlain, and essentially forced a war on Germany. So this is what comes increasingly out of the you can't tell the truth about a war anywhere close to the time it's over because of all the wartime propaganda, because of all the court historians that have to produce a very pleasing story and to make everyone feel good. And it's only years and years later. Normally it's at least a half a century before you can actually go out and find the real facts. In fact, most of the facts are locked up in archives and they can't be released for 50 years and so on and so on. So the historians can't even get evidence. And so you get these false pictures. They fuse lies together with patriotism so that the lies are upheld by patriotism. And it's all kind of covered in a smokescreen of humanitarianism and saving democracy. And So that becomes the picture, and then you get a half a century, all the generations and a half a century raised on this kind of false story, and it's very difficult to change. It takes a long time, and the historians who try to get to the truth, who go into the graveyards where all the facts are buried and dig them up, they generally get demonized and marginalized. So it takes a very long time. It really doesn't happen until everyone concerned with the war and the cover-up are dead. And the subsequent generations don't have the emotional involvement. So that's the main thing that comes out of this, is that everything that we understand about World War II is a lie. There's not truth in it. And so something that major has, of course, affected the consciousness not only of the United States, but of the entirety of the world. It's led to all kinds of other very unfortunate events, and so the effects of it continue to devastate 74 years after the war is over.
Yes, indeed. I could not agree with you more. And really, if you look at it, I mean, and this was a big wake-up call to me when I was first investigating, or I guess reassessing the official World War II narrative, is that the official, like, state-sanctioned, Hollywood-promoted version of World War II really is kind of the linchpin of the entire globalist system we see in place today. You know, the sort of the New World Order agenda, so to speak, kind of rests upon the official narrative of World War II. It's resulted in the destruction of sovereign nation states, especially in the Western world, the open borders agenda and this refugee resettlement and all this other nonsense. So it really kind of serves as the pillar of this globalist system. Would you agree with that?
Yes, of course. In fact, this was one of the purposes of Roosevelt. He encouraged Churchill to get into war with Germany because he wanted to use the war to break the power of England and take the reserve currency role away from the British pound. Because if you're the reserve currency, you're automatically the most powerful country, because everyone has to use your currency to settle international payments. And that means you can pay your bills by printing money. And so once the war ruined England, then Roosevelt at Bretton Woods established the dollar as the world reserve currency. And ever since, that's where the globalism came from. The United States could impose its will because it had the role of world money. So if you read some of these histories, such as Irving's, you will see how Roosevelt deceives Churchill and gets him into a war that he can't pay for, and is totally dependent on Washington, and how this is used to dismantle the British Empire, break up its control over trade, and lose the role of reserve currency, and thereby find that its financial empire is now subordinated to Washington. So in a way, the World War II was as much Roosevelt's war against Great Britain as it was a war against Germany.
Now, I got to ask you about the alleged Jewish Holocaust that we're told took place during World War II, because after you wrote this piece back in May, The Lies About World War II, which again is the most popular piece on your site, I know it was also published at the UNS Review, I believe, and probably some other websites as well picked it up. And it's an excellent article. I'll have a link to it when I post this podcast. But since you published this article back in May, you've been denounced as like a Holocaust denier. You know, these sorts of labels get thrown out there at anybody who's critically investigating World War II, essentially. So I got to ask you, I mean, what is your overall assessment of the alleged Jewish Holocaust narrative of World War II, which basically is the civic religion in the Western world? I mean, it's promoted and elevated everywhere, all throughout society. So I'm curious, what are your views about this topic?
Well, you know, I've never investigated the Holocaust or written anything about it. And in the article, Lies of World War II, this is just a book review. I wrote a book review of two of Irving's books. One is called Hitler's War, and the other is called Churchill's War. And I simply reported Irving's findings and conclusions. And I reported his view of the Holocaust. And that's all it is. I just reported what Irving had unearthed in 30 years of research. And Irving says there were any documents. There were many massacres of Jews and deportations. But what he says is that although there was a Holocaust of sorts, it wasn't the organized one that the official story presents. And all I did was report that. I didn't express any views because I was explaining Irving's views of Hitler, of Churchill, of how the war came about and so, and its consequences. Wikipedia, the online encyclopedia, I think maybe just because they're stupid, they can't tell the difference between me expressing my views and reporting on the views of Irving. And so it was Wikipedia that took my explanation of Irving's findings and made them my findings. Of course, I've never studied it and really don't know anything about it. I'm really not very interested in it because the Holocaust was World War II. There were at least 50 million people killed. There were 26 million Russians, so that's 20 million more than the Holocaust figure of 6 million Jews. So, and in fact, we now know from more recent historians that after the war was over, about twice as many Germans as the Holocaust figure died from the resettlement and from Dwight Eisenhower's policy of murdering 1.5 million German POWs with starvation and exposure. So when you look at all the numbers, the Holocaust, even the 6 million that the official figure says, it's a tiny fraction of the real Holocaust, the real deaths. So why is it that this minute percentage of the deaths of the war overshadows everything else? So that's the reason I'm not all that interested in it. You really have a hard time studying it because it's sort of blocked and restrained. And if you find out anything, as I understand from historians who studied it, you really can't say it. In some countries, they imprison you if the figure is 6 million and you say, well, actually, it was only 5 million, they want to put you in jail.
Yes, it's ridiculous.
To be studied, and it doesn't have all that much meaning in terms of the broader scheme of things. Like, as I say, there were 26 million Russians killed. So it could well be that, you know, since Wikipedia is an open source, that one of the Israel lobbies decided to. I occasionally post articles by Israelis and by Jews who are very critical of Israeli policy. So this probably makes the Anti-Defamation League think I'm an anti-Semite because I post things that Jews say about Israel. And they may have sent some of their trolls in there to monkey with my bio and stick in that I'm a Holocaust denier. I really don't have an opinion of it. But I do know that people have researched it carefully and found that it's not a story that they can substantiate. So, again, just to repeat, I explained Irving's views. And instead, I was supposed to, I guess, jump on him and take him to task. Instead, I just gave an objective review of what he said. So that's how I became a Holocaust denier, not from anything that I've studied or written about it.
Yes, exactly. Well, and these smears are just used to delegitimize and discredit people that are thinking critically and thinking independently and investigating controversial aspects of our history and even, you know, contemporary events. So if you're being smeared as a Holocaust denier or a conspiracy theorist or an anti-Semite, you're probably on the right track and using your own brain to think critically about the information you're consuming. Dr. Roberts, I know we're right about at the 30-minute mark, so I want to go ahead and wrap up. To kind of conclude here, you gave the assessment of Trump. I mean, I do agree with you to a large extent that the establishment, he is working against virtually the entire political establishment, and it's much more of a formidable obstacle than he maybe anticipated. But I'm curious, do we have any hope in politics, or I'm just curious your assessment, I guess, of the upcoming election. Do you see any hope in anything actually changing?
Well, I think the only hope is if Trump survives the coup and turns on them, and they get indicted and sentenced. If that happens, then it would break up the ranks of the deep state, and this would embolden the population, including the Trump deplorables, and people then would be willing to embrace politicians who would put America first and not immigrant invaders first or Israeli policies first or whatever. So, but if he doesn't survive the coup and is not reelected, then I think for all practical purposes, politics just becomes 100% sham. Like today, it's probably 80% sham. It'll be 100% sham, and no honest person would run for office. And honest people simply will cease voting, not that it would make any difference. And the deep state is would simply rule. And so we'll have to see if Trump's Justice Department does its job and comes forward with these reports. We've been hearing about these reports. They're supposed to come out in October. And now Horowitz is supposed to come out in December. And but where are the Russiagate indictments? So it looks to me like the Republicans themselves are part of the problem, and they're not using the information that's very favorable to Trump and very destructive to the CIA, the FBI, and the Democratic National Committee, particularly Hillary and her gang. So, for example, we see in the so-called impeachment hearings that you have these you have these State Department bureaucratic types who essentially think Trump should be indicted because he didn't let them run foreign policy. Well, this is not an impeachable offense. The president's supposed to set the directions of foreign policy, not some bureaucratic people in the State Department. So when you – and there are a lot of people who want Trump impeached just because they don't like him. He's a misogynist, so none of the feminists like him. He's not protecting the environment. He's letting polluters loot national monuments, wildlife preserves. So he's got all of these people who don't like him for that reason. They think that's a good reason for him to be impeached. So you have so many people who, for whatever cause, therefore, that's being undermined by Trump, that want him impeached. So it's going to be a difficult thing for him to survive. And when you see also how long it takes the Republicans to come up with these reports, we already know we've had 3 years of exposure of all the wrongdoings and the Russiagate hoax. So why can't they come up with it? We already know what it is. We know that people commit felonies. Where are the indictments? It's not like we have to go discover what they did. We already know. So when you see the Justice Department just sitting there on his butt sucking his thumb, you wonder if there's any kind of accountability at all. And Trump just seems to be so isolated. And it's very difficult to see how he can come out of this. If he does, not that I'm a great fan of his. I'm totally opposed to the plunder he's allowing polluters to do to the environment. And I'm totally opposed to him permitting the overthrow of Evo Morales in Bolivia. This was a crime. A lot of things he does that are just totally unacceptable to me. But the question is whether we keep any form of democracy, even occasional accountability of government or not. And for that reason, I overlook my dislike of things that Trump does, because whoever is there, if there's a coup against him, then every future president suffers a coup. I mean, you know, this was a slippery slope for the Romans. Once you overthrew the first emperor, all of them could be overthrown. In fact, most of them were. And so that just produces massive political instability. And to me, that is the greatest point to avoid just the complete political collapse and just have the system run by a gang of crooks and gangsters. Well, I think that's what we face if the coup against Trump succeeds.
Indeed. Well, Dr. Roberts, thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it. This was a huge honor for me to talk to you. Maybe we can do this again in the future, but for now, we will wrap up. And again, thank you so much for joining me. I'll talk to you real soon.
Okay, John, thank you.